Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, fortnightly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. And this week we've got with us Nikita Soboleth, who's creator of the Django Stubs plugin for Django. Hi, Nikita.
Hi. I'm actually not the creator, but I'm the maintainer.
Okay. Well, I know you from Django Stubs, but before we get into that, because I want to talk about typing and, you know, everything around that in Django, perhaps you could introduce yourself, and because you do lots more. So tell us all about and how you got into Django and things.
I really like two things right now in my professional career. It is Python and typing. So I try to be involved into the things as closely as I can. I work on MyPy from time to time, and I also contribute to different other libraries like DryPython. It is very, very type-heavy plugins to MyPy and to Python itself. It really adds a lot of new ideas to regular Python. You can use things like monads, higher kind of types, functional composition, stuff like this from functional programming in your ordinary Python, and it will also type check your code with MyPy plugin. So,
okay. So you just used a really scary word there. You used the word monads.
I
love that word.
You know, I dabble in functional programming, but, you know, what's a monad when it's at home?
I don't know how to say it in English, but a monad is a monoid in category of endofunctors, I guess.
I said when it was at home.
But actually, I don't use the word monad in my DryPython tutorials. I use word container because it is really simple and it kind of looks like a container. It's not a specific term, so you can mean anything by a container, and that's what we do. And it is really easy to explain these new ideas to Python developers using friendly language, not a complex one.
Okay, so before we dig in, I want to just push slightly on what you've talked about there. You talked about functional programming. So, you know, Python's, it's kind of multi-paradigm. You know, you can do object-oriented, you can do functional elements out of that come out of the box, but it's not like programming in, I don't know, Haskell or Elm or other language. So the DryPython ecosystem that you're working in, that's part of that is about increasing functional programming that's available.
Yeah. And it also showcases that functional programming is not scary and it is really helpful and pragmatic. You can solve real life problems with functional programming, with our abstractions and our ideas. And it is really easy. For example, I use functional programming for my dependency injection. I also provide examples with Django code, so it's quite relevant. And it is really easy because what you do in regular dependency injection that you create some kind of containers, resolvers, and you have a lot of annotations and stuff like this. With functional programming, you just call a function. You have your regular codes, and then you call a function, and your dependencies are injected.
Yeah, and when you say injected, you mean passed as a parameter, right? So dependency injection word, it always is, what's that? Well, it's like, well, you know, say you've got an object and it needs, I don't know, the database, you'd pass in the database, or if it needs the cache, you'd pass in the cache. So perhaps you could say, like, for a listener, like I go along, I do my Django in a normal way. What would I get moving to a more functional style? What are kind of the benefits of a functional approach?
My personal thing that I really, really like in this functional approach, typed functional approach, is that you can express a lot of ideas in your type and annotations, not just regular ones like this function accepts a string, that's it, but you can express things like this function can raise an exception, and you can specify which exceptions this function works with. You can specify that this function needs some external state. For example, it needs a database, and it is as simple as just specifying a return type. You just say that this function needs a database, and it will be composed sometime later with your actual application code. It will be type checked, and it will be working. And this is the very essential of this idea for me, is that you can inject your ideas into your annotations and into your functional declarations. That's it for me.
And is that just a purely documentation advantage, or is that code safety as well?
It is a code safety feature because, as I said, MyPy can check all these things. And if you, for example, forget to handle an exception, MyPy will warn you about it. The same same principle Rust uses, and it proved to be a really easy and maintainable way of dealing with problems in your application.
Can I ask you personally, how did you get into this, you know, the functional world or in static typing? Like, was that just you came from other languages, or what about why Python and add that and, you know, work on that?
That's a really interesting story. My first language was C sharp. And then I switched to Java like in a year, and they're quite similar, so it was not a big deal. And then I've tried Python, and I'm still happy with it. Because Java 11 years ago, it is not the same Java we have right now. And this switch was kind of escape from a lot of boilerplate code, XML, ugly IDEs, and IDEs. How can you pronounce this?
IDE.
IDE. We have to think about it too.
And then maybe like 5 years ago, I fell in love with a programming language called Elixir.
Okay.
And it is kind of similar to Python because it has a very similar syntax. It is based on Ruby, and Ruby and Python are kind of similar. So it will be familiar for a lot of Python developers. And Elixir is a very good programming language. It is really complex inside, but outside, it is really, really easy. For example, when you write your code in Elixir, it looks like you write Ruby. And Ruby is simple, no big deal. But inside, a lot of interesting things happen. All this Ruby code gets translated into some Lisp-like language that you can really use. And Elixir is not like Ruby-like, it is more like Lisp-like, but it is hidden from users. And then you realize that you write sync code, but it is actually working asynchronously. And that's just a boomer for me. Like, it also hides a lot of functional things away from you. And it looks like you are writing regular code, but it is functional. And then I started to communicate a lot with functional community here in Russia, and they turned to be great folks, and I really enjoyed functional conferences, ideas, and people. So I started to learn new functional languages like Haskell and F-sharp and stuff like this, and then I realized that all these languages do not solve a lot of problems Python does. So I thought that it is a good idea to have a mix of both worlds and take good parts from both of them. And that was my initial motivation for DryPython. And I think it worked pretty well.
So I like what you said about async, because I wanted to ask you, on your personal site, you have a post called How Async Should Have Been, with a lot of code examples. And I assume that comes from, you know, it's basically functional. But I wondered if there's anything you wanted to add to that. We're going to link to that. That was a really interesting post to read.
Yeah. Thanks for asking, because it is really a piece that I'm really proud of, because this was really hard to achieve in Python. And the core idea of this post is that you can switch your IO stack based on your needs. And it is not something functional programming are not aware of. For example, in languages like Haskell, you can, or Scala, you can switch your I/O when you run your program. You don't have to specify what kind of I/O synchronous or asynchronous is used. You just specify it when you run your program, and it works.
That's a wild idea.
And can I ask how does this relate to the sans I/O movement there is in Python? Because I think in the Python HTTP world, people are interested in that.
Yeah, it is kind of related, but I think the core idea of sans I/O is that you can change your implementation.
Yeah.
You cannot change is this function async or not. You can just change some implementation details. It is important as well, but my post was about the next step.
Okay, because there's that influential post about what color is your function. So you've got and one of the issues with async code is that once you declare one function as async, well, then the calling function needs to be async, and then the calling function needs to be async, and all the way up to the root, and your whole program ends up being async. So you end up with these kind of two worlds.
I want to ask you a question. What do you think about the current state of two worlds in Python? What do you think about sync and async worlds?
That's a good question. I made a joke tweet the other week about something like, oh, I'm starting to come back to the idea that threads are the way forward, and that I see a lot of people jumping onto the async bandwagon for use cases where it's perhaps not, the complexity of it isn't justified, and then they struggle because it is more complex, and you do have to think through the calling structure of your program more clearly, and you do have to plan things in advance more carefully. And my kind of thought is that at the moment we don't have enough warning signs saying, hey, only step over this fence if you need to. I think we should have more signs saying, hey, you know what? A threaded synchronous worker is perfectly acceptable for 99% of your use cases, and likely your use case is in there. So consider before you come over here. But if you're going to come over here, welcome. And that's my worry at the moment, is async is very exciting and very new and very, oh, isn't this the way forward? But I'm not convinced it is for a lot of use cases. So that's my answer to your question. What makes you ask? Like, because that's an interesting question.
Because Django right now it is in the position where a lot of new competitors arise, like
Fast API or whatever.
Fast API, and quite a lot of them offer both worlds. Fast API, you can use async workers and async functions, and you can use sync functions, and both are fine. But in Django, things are not async right now.
No, it's still under development. So I mean, with Django 3, we had the ASCII handler, and then 3.1, we've got async views, but they're kind of constrained by the thread sensitivity of the ORM. And so in Django 3.2, the throughput is quite limited, because essentially your worker needs to be single-threaded, because it needs to make sure that the ORM calls are all done in the right thread. From Django 4.0, there will be per request thread sensitivity, or per thread context. So that should mean that we can have one thread worker per request, and we should get some decent throughput increases. But this is still a progressive movement. And then the next step will be making the ORM async compatible. And at that point, then you start to think, yeah, we should be more or less competitive. But like, Django's goal here isn't to be the fastest async web framework, right? Django's goal is to offer you a kind of batteries included solution. So your 90% case is, just use WSGI, just use the threaded workers that you've got, and that will cover your use case. But if you need to step out for an async view, because you need higher viewpoint throughput for some particular endpoint or something, you don't want to have to change web framework just to do that. And so if Django can have a nice solution there, then that's a success. That's That's the win story. And then there will always be specialist frameworks beyond that that go, you know, and then there'll be specialist language. Like, there comes a point that why are you even using Python? Why aren't you using Rust or Go or, you know, something else? Well,
Elixir.
Yeah, or Elixir. Yeah. I mean, why aren't you using Phoenix? And, you know, that's my kind of thought on it, is that Django is mature and stable and reliable, and it comes with all the things that it comes with. And adding async is like, yeah, it's that you don't want to have to change web framework just to add an async view, you know. That's why.
What do you think, Nikita? If you were in charge of Django in all respects, what would you do?
I actually had this conversation with several Python developers. And we were joking about my political campaign for the next Django elections.
Are you going to run?
No. It was just joking, but there were realistic jokes about ideas I have. I asked core developers of Django about adding types to Django itself several times. And I still think that it is a good idea, because I see that some people fork my Django Steps project just to make them compatible with different type checkers, because we are focused on MyPy and we have a lot of boilerplate code that is required only for MyPy to work. There are some issues with MyPy, so that's fine. But adding this kind of stuff to Django itself will help a lot of developers get these benefits from having type hints embedded in your application. And this is something I would highly prioritize if if you ask me. So, and the second point is that Django offers a lot of ways to do some business logic things, like create new query sets for some specific tasks, create new managers for some specific tasks. And Django's approach is not something I really like, because I have to re-educate a lot of developers who come to work for me or who just want to be re-educated about business logic in Django. It is something that a lot of people struggle with. And I guess that we as a Django community need some go-to solutions to common problems that are not embedded into Django itself and that are just suggested for other developers. For example, if you have some business logic, put it here, structure it like this, do a dependency injection in this case, switch to some typed approach if your code is large enough, and stuff like this.
There's two. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Okay, so let's. Which one do you want to talk about first? Let's talk with the business logic first. I think that's a good point, because you kind of have to learn to write a manager method that encapsulates your business, your object creation logic, so that, you know, it might be a query set method, but a method that you're not just creating an object and calling save on it and forgetting to run, you know, the other logic that goes with that save call. And maybe you put it in save, but then, well, how do you save the model without creating that logic? And so you learn these things the hard way, right? You do it wrong 50 times, and then you come with a pattern that, oh, that works for me. And, you know, years later. Is that not Will's job, though, to, you know, document the patterns and, you know, guides and books? And
yeah, I just listen to smarter people like you two talk, and then I rewrite it for beginners.
No, but
basically,
I guess the great,
but no, it's true. But how do you know to do that without having the pain of doing it wrong, right? Because if you ask the community, it's like, well, it depends a bit on what your use case is, right? Like, Carlton, you have use cases. I mean, I don't generally get into model managers at all, actually, even in the professionals book, because I ran out of space. But if there is a trove of best ways to do it, I would add it.
It is not about just managers. It is about how you write your fat models or slim models. It is how about you write your views, and what you do in these views. and stuff like this.
Yeah.
Right now, there is no architectural consensus in Django community. And that's the problem I'm talking about.
Okay.
Well, there's even a post on the Django forum I added, I think a year ago, about where do you put the logic in your Django project apps? And it's, there's a lot of answers. I think generally people would say fat models and managers a little bit, but there isn't a consensus. I would agree with that beyond, maybe pull it down as far as you can. You don't want it in your templates. Your views, probably not so much, but how exactly do you models, managers, that's where it gets a little squishy from what I see.
And that's where domain-driven design comes in, because a lot of people are starting to understand that it is not something like complex and something that is out of their understanding. It is some simple exercise that you do to write better codes and to structure it better and to name things better. And a lot of people ask me, like, how can you combine these two things, domain-driven design and Django? I usually tell them that it is not related to your framework of choice. You can do it in any framework, in any code ecosystem you want. But I think that it is something Django should also address. For example, how can you structure your Django applications? How can you structure your logic inside these applications? Where should you put your boundaries between these applications? And how can you check that these boundaries are not violated and they are respected? So these kind of things I'm really thinking about lately.
The question I've started asking guests is, how do you, so you run an agency, which we'll talk about, how do you like to structure your Django projects and apps? Because everyone does it a little bit differently, but just you personally, how do you like to do it?
I start with business context, and I spend some time asking different companies what contexts do they have for this application. You can call it bounded context, you can call it subdomain. It doesn't really matter at this point. But in the end, you will have some list of things that you need to implement. For example, shop, accountant, marketing, stuff like this. And I try to transfer these contexts as Django apps, separated Django apps. And sometimes I even forbid to import stuff from different contexts. It might have some exceptions, of course, because you can have some utility domains, you can have some shared domains. It depends, but most of the time, they should be isolated. And then I structure my application regularly, views, models, stuff like this. I keep all my views and models as simple as possible. They do not have any business logic. My model is like just fields and maybe as string method, that's it. And my views is just calling some business logic function, and all my business logic lives in a special folder called logic. And then I start to structure this logic folder, and it really depends on what we do here. Sometimes it is simple. It is just like three or four files with different names. For example, this file is about some subcontext, for example, about some employees, and the second one is some warehouses, for example, and stuff like this. And I put everything inside. But then I use very specific technique to separate these files to be more readable, more maintainable, and all of this. I call it complexity waterfall or complexity overflow, if you wish. And I have a very strict linter enabled, which can tell me when it is time to separate my module into several modules. And that's how I iterate my architecture.
That's really interesting. I guess it goes without saying you're a function-based views person rather than a class-based views? Yeah. Just had to check. Carlton, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of totally agree. It's massively difficult to know how to organize your application. But I'm wondering how much of it is a kind of documentation question, like, you know, a sort of advanced guide versus, you know, what kind of code component, code structures might we add to the framework to enforce these kind of patterns. I mean, it might be as a third-party package because, you know, as you say, there's no consensus, but is it a code problem or is it a documentation problem or a, you know, an explanation problem?
That's a really hard question for me because I really love documentation and I spend quite a lot of time writing it, both for open source projects and closed source projects. But I try to distance from closed source project and spend most of my time on open source. But there are a lot of techniques that I use to document my projects. And then when I know that my project is documented, I can tell whether this is a documentation problem, architecture problem, or code problem. But without this groundwork on documentation and clear business context, you cannot have this separation clearly defined.
But I'm just wondering what we might add to a Django. So, I mean, the criticism is, or not criticism, but the comment, the thing to improve in Django is the structuring of, or the advice around structuring domain logic. And obviously for my given application, I need to think about what I'm trying to build, but then what's the general stuff that the framework can deliver?
Maybe we can formulate this as some advanced documentation, because right now documentation is great. I always say that Django's docs are perfect for beginners, and it is really easy to learn Django from its documentation, and that's a good thing, and I think it should stay this way. But on the other hand, there are different problems when senior developers try to find their answers in this documentation that is written for not senior people, let's say it like this. And there is a clear conflict here, because when a person wants to know how to structure code and their logic, it is something very opinionated, and it is something that you cannot just give to everybody. You have to struggle, as someone said, to learn the wrong ways before you learn correct ones. And maybe it should be a complete new project, documentation project for some seasoned developers.
I mean, it's one thing I think perhaps missing is like really advanced books in the Django. You know, there's lots of there's been lots of books. I mean, Will's books are sort of the only current ones, really. But there's lots of introductory material, and then there's some middle material, and then there's like, and then there's blog posts of, you know, from I would cite a Tom Christie post from about 10 years ago. It's like, well, but okay, that's 10 years old. Is there nothing new? Well, yes, there's a few ones. There's that one where so and so said something, and then so and so replied, and yeah, but that's all kind of esoteric knowledge that you've got to absorb from time and the ecosystem. It's not like, oh, if I need advanced, you know, Django modeling, where do I go?
It's hard to write advanced stuff too. I mean, of my books, the advanced one is the hardest to update. I've got way more feedback on it because I think it becomes a bit more opinionated in a real sense. For beginners, I can just say, so function-based views versus class-based views. I can just sort of say, we're going to do one, and a beginner will go along with me. But when it's these more advanced topics, it's harder to just wave a wand and say, this is how to do it, even if there was consensus in the community around advanced techniques. I think that's part of the issue. I find it's much more subjective as it becomes more advanced. I mean, I would love it to be less subjective. I sort of, if there was agreement, I would just do it how the community wants and focus on other things, but I don't know that that's there.
Maybe some Django developers can push their Django way views on other community? What do you think about that?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, what do you mean? I think everyone should write everything. I mean, but how do you push it? I mean, I think you had said, maybe there should be an advanced docs section. I mean, one thing I think that works about the Django docs is it's very specific. There's not really an overarching theory of business logic. It's just this particular case. I think people can agree on that. But if someone came in and said, this is the advanced way to do something, I feel like there would be pushback around it. That doesn't mean a group can't just go off and say, this is our opinion on these advanced techniques. That would be fantastic. My sense is with the Django docs, there's not as much of that. So if it's beyond a specific use case, it might be harder to get it through, but I don't know. Don't know until you try. I just think it's hard to put a lot of work into something that won't be necessarily accepted. So maybe just saying, having a third-party package of advanced Django docs, I don't know. I'd love to see it. I guess I'm not aware that there is a consensus, though I wish that there were.
Well, there you are.
But maybe that's because nobody's documented it. So,
DryPython started as a project to solve this Django architectural problem because my coworker and a friend and ex-Django core developer Artyom Malyshev proofed it 44. 404. He started his project called DryPython Stories to solve this architectural problem to create a single way to express your business logic. Then it grew in a different route, and right now it is more like functional programming stuff, and it is not like about Django architecture anymore, but this was really connected to this problem some time ago.
Interesting. Well, let's cut back to the other topic, because Nikita, I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't, be a teeny bit more involved in the day-to-day, not much goes on, but, the day-to-day that's on the framework, and then come in and stand for the technical board and get elected to the technical board and then make the case for why we should have types. Because, Adam Johnson, he's a current technical board member. He's likely to stand again. He's been writing a lot of posts on typing on his blog, so perhaps he'd be keen. I mean, it came up, a cycle ago. And the technical board at the time said, after a long discussion on GitHub, there was a long discussion on the draft of a DEP, a Django enhancement proposal, lots of discussion. And then the technical board, I think they had a couple of main reasons. One was the maturity of the typing system. And then two was this other point that you talked about, was that the different typers and needing to serve not just MyPy, but, three or four different typing systems which aren't necessarily all compatible. So, I mean, clearly you're a fan. So what would be I'm a jobbing Django developer. Why should I adopt types? Like, what's the benefit for me? And then how would we bring it in? Like, what would that look like to actually bring types into Django? And why can't they just live in stubs? Because wasn't the idea that stubs files were equivalent?
Yeah. I will start from the end of the question. It is really hard to maintain stubs because you have to track all the changes in recent Django versions and apply the same changes to two code bases. And they live in different repositories and maintained by other people, so it is really hard. One more problem is that for some reason, current stub distribution is not really version dependent. So you can have, for example, Django 2.2, and you can have stubs for Django 3. And that's a big problem. So when you run your type checking, MyPy will tell that everything is fine. You can call this method with these parameters, it's fine. But in runtime, it will not work because you have a version mismatch between Django and stubs. We cannot maintain stubs for different Django versions because this is a project run by a community. I have a lot of pull requests with bug fixes, new features, and everything. But I am the only person right now who maintains journey stubs from day to day. So and my time is quite limited. So yeah. Sorry.
Hey, you needn't apologize. You do a fantastic job. I mean, and Django just...
You're talking to like the one of the few people who can relate to that, and Carlton, not me.
But like Django Stubbs is a phenomenal project, and you've done a phenomenal thing. And the, you know, the way it works is just, you know, it's truly awe-inspiring. It's like, wow, that's really impressive. So don't apologize for the, you know.
Yeah, I want to highlight the community work on it because it is really amazing. This is one of the most contributed projects in my experience. It has like maybe around 200 contributors, and so that's a big number. So that's the first thing. It is really hard to maintain stubs separated from the main project. The second point is that it is a good thing to add stubs to the code base itself, because when you do that, you can detect bugs easier in the application itself. You can run MyPy on Django, and it will find a lot of maybe some bugs, maybe some false positives, and you know, we can work from there. One more thing is that when you have stubs and types inside your application, you start to think differently about your code. For example, there are quite a few techniques that are really hard to type in Django, and they can be done differently. And it is something to consider when making technical decisions, is that if this thing is hard to type, or is it something simple to type? And it can be a choosing factor between two different solutions. But when you don't have this context, you don't think about this way, because Python is a dynamic language, and a lot of people assume that a lot of dynamic behavior is a good thing. But then they struggle with it, and there is no way back. For example, I will not give any examples right now, because
let me just cut in there, because the dynamism is the sort of thing. So, you know, typing brings any number of benefits, and it's, you know, it is good when MyPy goes, oh, you need this here and that's that, and you're like, oh, well, brilliant, thank you. And but the contrast is this kind of idea of that one of the great things about Python is that you sketch out your application, and you just knock open a file, and you know, you import a few things, and you write a little function, and all of a sudden you've got this script, and it's always 30 lines, and it always does what you want. It took you about an hour to write, and that's, whereas if you have to suddenly start, you know, you don't have to start typing in this context, but that kind of ability to sketch your application in without the sort of overhead of other languages, the boilerplate of other languages, is felt to be threatened and under threat. So that's kind of an aesthetic point. But the other one being that historically, are the types that we accept are quite loose. We accept, you know, well, it's meant to be a request, but it could be an any, because, you know, as long as it looks like a request, it's going to work. Is there going to be a backwards compatibility issue with, you know, we start typing it, and we go, well, do you know what, this is or any, which isn't very pretty. Should we tighten the behavior? What are we to do then? Are we to tighten the behavior? Are we to say, look, do you know what, for the last 16 years, this has taken pretty much anything in here, but from now on, it's going to want a request.
The cool thing here is that we don't force developers to actually follow these annotations. We can just work with the developers who want to do that, and they will respect our annotations and do what MyPy will say to them. And other developers can still use dynamic behaviors and not use MyPy. That's the call of optional static typing. And that's the beauty of it.
So I'm imagining that I've got a genuine use case where I want to make use of duck typing. I can just not type check that bit. I can type ignore that.
Yeah. It is as easy as writing a no key comment.
Yeah.
That's it. You can ignore the whole file, for example, if you do some crazy stuff in there. So that's fine too. And you can also type on the exterior, and this is fine as well. You can use some typed exterior and dynamic interior, or vice versa. You can type only parts you need. And this is something that is way cooler than just having dynamic typing. Because when you're limited to some instrument, you just have to live with it. But when you have a choice, you can use different types and different type systems depending on your task. That's the beauty of current Python.
Okay. And you think, you know, inlining type annotations in Django is a realistic and doable thing at this point?
I don't think so. Because there is no one to push this idea, there is no community need for it to be inside the Django itself. So I guess it is going to stay this way.
Okay. But you think that's... But what's the selling point? Like, you know, I'm a fan. I like the types. I like typing. I like to use it. You know, and I kind of see all number of places where that would be nice if this was typed. But what's the USP? What's the, you know, why should we do it? Why, like,
he just said that, Carlton, right?
I can repeat myself. What do I mean?
Like, on the one hand, you've made the case. On the other, you're like, you don't think it'll happen because there's no community need. I don't quite... That's the question. What do you mean by there's no community need?
There is no community need in having these projects in the same place. Community is quite happy with what they have right now because it works, and it works for like 95%. And when it does not work, you can put a type comment, type ignore, and it will work. Mm-hmm. So... but I think it is not more about having some external typing. It is more about some architectural decisions and more about some correctness in the Django itself. So that's why I think it will be a good idea to merge these two projects at some point, but I'm not pushing it at any means.
Okay, interesting. Thank you. Super. Wow, that's two really good.
I had two things that are non-typing. Are there more typing things?
No, that's Carlton, that's cool. That's...
Well, I just wanted to ask about, we make services and Dry Labs.
Oh.
So this is your consultancy, and then I guess Dry Labs is you educate people. So I'll put it to you. What do you want to say about both those, since that's your day-to-day, right?
Yeah. 1 year ago, I decided to quit my own business because I decided to contribute all my time to open source projects. And right now, I'm doing exactly that. But Dry Labs is... So I can say for sure that it is quite uncertain that... I'm quite certain that I will not go into... web development, paid web development anymore, so I'm done. Thanks. But I really like to teach. It is something I enjoy, and it does not bother me at all. I can even say that it helped me to be a happy person. So Dry Labs is a good thing, but I just don't sell a lot of consultancy. And it just works from time to time, and I'm happy with things are right now. And if you want to have some advanced typing consultancy and some advanced typing tutorials from me or from my team, you're more than welcome to contact me and we will figure things out.
And I had one more topic to ask, was about the Django Stabs project and whether you'd look for more contributors. A couple of summers ago, you did the Google Summer of Code for the MyPy plugin there, which went really well. Casper built that. Would you, I mean, you were open to contributors, open to doing Google Summer of Code again type thing? If you get an application,
yeah, it was great. I had a lot of pleasant moments during Google Summer of Code. And Casper did a really great job. So his contributions are like in the real heart of the project. It's MyPy plugin. So thanks a lot for giving this chance. And I'm more than welcome any contributors, because it is a community project in the real sense of this word. In the real sense of this word. A lot of people contribute things that they find in types that are typed incorrectly, that are missing, that can be done better. So I just have to accept their contributions and merge them. That's it.
Just like Carlton, right? That's what you do, Carlton.
Merge. Mostly it's... I mean, Nikita, do you have this thing? I sometimes have this thing where I'm just like, I haven't got the energy right now. I have to just pause. I have to pause. I can't, you know, I can't give your PR the time it needs to click the button, because I need to think about, I mean, how do you manage that kind of ongoing time commitment, I guess, and emotional commitment it is?
I don't know.
Fair enough. You just keep going. Yeah.
Well, what else? Is there anything? I know we're sort of up on time. Is there anything we haven't asked you that, or you want to mention while we have a couple thousand people listening?
Follow me on GitHub and you'll you'll be on top of typing stuff in Python.
And can they sponsor you on GitHub? Have you signed up for that since you're doing open source?
GitHub sponsors. No, I'm not on GitHub sponsors because it is not available in Russia yet. But you can sponsor DryPython organization, and you can sponsor We Make Services organization. Which one do you like best? That's a good thing. And since I'm doing my open source all the time, it really helps. But that's a whole another discussion about why people should sponsor some people on the internet doing something they want.
Well, I'm really happy to meet you. I've heard Carlton speak of you for a long time, actually, probably related to that Google Summer of Code project, but he's such a huge fan of typing and your work. So it's very nice to finally meet you.
Thanks a lot for having me. It was a really big deal for me to speak on Django Chat. I listen from some episodes from time to time and I really enjoyed it. So,
thanks for coming on. It's really nice. I wanted to get you on because I wanted you to make the case, and you know, we'll see how how it evolves over time.
And of course, thanks a lot for both of you for your Django contributions. And that's a really great job. And I really, really love Django, and it is my go-to framework. That's my gratitude to you.
Okay. Super. Well.
Anyways, Carlton, can you read us out?
Brilliant. Well, okay. Thank you again, Nikita. Thank you for listening. We'd Chat Django and Django Chat. Or Django Chat and Chat Django on Twitter. That's it. Join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.